This podcast of Long Story Short with Leslie Wilcox is brought to you by PBS Hawaii and our generous supporters. To view episodes of Long Story Short with Leslie Wilcox, visit pbshawaii.org.
I had my responsibilities as the platoon leader, and we had this code in the regiment. Don't expect your men to go up if you're not willing to go up. In the so-called book, the training book, it's never led by the officer. Patrols go out, or scouts out, or something like that. The leader stays in the back. But in our code, as the boys would say, you go first, buddy.
The late Senator Daniel K. Inouye learned the intricacies and demands of leadership on the battlefields of World War II. He took these lessons with him into the world of government and politics, where he became one of the most powerful and influential leaders not only of our state, but of our nation. In this edition of Long Story Short, we'll look back at some of our previous Long Story Short guests and their lessons on leadership, including how the nuances of local culture helped to shape their leadership styles. Lessons on leadership next on Long Story Short.
Long Story Short with Leslie Wilcox is Hawaii's first weekly television program produced and broadcast in high definition.
Aloha mai kākou. I'm Leslie Wilcox. Master navigator Nainoa Thompson defines leadership as stepping up, knowing the right thing to do, and making it happen regardless of the consequences. Doing the right thing can sometimes require an extraordinary amount of conviction, courage, and the ability to inspire others. In this special edition of Long Story Short, we revisit some of the stories and challenges shared by Hawaii leaders. We begin with Thomas Kaʻulukukui Jr., chairman of the board and the managing trustee of Queen Liliʻuokalani Trust, who, like Senator Inouye, picked up many of his lessons in leadership on the battlefield. You went to Vietnam?
Went to Vietnam for a year, 1969-70.
What did you do in Vietnam?
I was a platoon sergeant in the paratroopers. I did well in training because I had a Kamehameha school ROTC background, and I ended up leading a platoon of men and basically jungle fighters. Young men at the time, they're like a pack of wolves, and they will do whatever the pack wants to do unless there is an alpha wolf that keeps them on track. And if you're not that person, they will get rid of you and get somebody else. So, you know, you really have to learn to step up.
Was there any particular event or moment when this all came clear to you, when you had any epiphanies over there?
Well, it was clear to me from the beginning. It's you know, when you're with a group like that, it's really clear. I've never been in a fight in my life. I was in three fights in the first month I was there because the men decided to test me. You have to realize this is Vietnam War and look at the way I look. Uh-huh. You know, I'm not a 6 foot, fair-skinned, round-eyed person. I was brought in to lead them, and I was obviously Asian. So I looked more like the enemy than I did look like them. So it was an interesting experience because I was in three fights with my own men shortly after I got there because they wanted to test whether or not I was tough enough to lead them.
And part of it was your culture?
Part of it was what I looked like. Part of it was there was another leader there who they wanted, who had been there a month longer than I was, and they weren't sure about me.
So you had to fight. There was no other way to do it.
Yeah, fortunately, I was a black belt in Taekwondo by then, before I got there. So without having to really hurt anybody, I guess they kind of got some religion and said, well, I guess he can beat up everybody else, so he's all right. We were someplace where another unit got in trouble, and they called us and said, you need to go help them. There's a battle going on. You need to go help them. And you need to get from point A to point B right now. The trouble was, to go from point A to point B, you had to go between two hills. General rule, bad idea to go between two hills, because if the enemy is up on both hills, they're going to ambush you, and you're never going to get there. You're going to be dead. So I called my squad leaders together. I ran a platoon of about 35 men. And I said, we have to go from point A to point B. They look at the map. They say, we can't go through there. I said, we don't have a choice, because if we don't go through there, By the time we take an alternate route, our people will be dead. So I gave an order. All the people kind of sat around and looked at me. They figured out where we were going, and they said, "We're not going." Now think about the magnitude of that problem. Battle commander, give an order, people won't go. Okay? Squad leaders gave an order, they wouldn't go. I tried to exhort them to move, they wouldn't move because, you know, the consequences were deadly. So finally at that point, I got my radio telephone operator, made him saddle up, put on his backpack, I put mine on. I said to everybody else, "If you're afraid, I'll go save them myself. I will fight this battle by myself. But you better hope I get killed, because if I'm not, I'm going to come back and fix this." Off I went, took the longest, slowest, smallest 10 steps of my life down the trail, waiting for to hear if anybody else got up. And fortunately, I started hearing people getting up. They got up, and they followed me, and off we went, and we made it all right. Difficult experience. I'm not sure what would have happened if they didn't follow, but one of the things I learned from that is you got to lean in front. You can't just tell people to go, especially if it's difficult. You got to be willing to pick up your rifle, put on your pack, and lead in front.
And be willing to go it alone?
And be willing to go it alone if you have to.
So do you have a, you know, 25-word nutshell definition of leadership?
I have a three-word definition of leadership. My definition is that leadership is influence, nothing more, nothing less. If you have influence and can influence people and their thoughts and emotions and actions, then you have leadership ability. That says nothing about your morality, because Hitler had leadership ability. But in a very condensed sense, I think leadership is influence, and learning to influence in a positive way people's thoughts and emotions and actions are the core of leadership, I think.
A wartime battlefield can shape leaders. So can growing up in a rural environment where shared values help to create community well-being. Colbert Matsumoto, born and raised on the island of Lanai, is the chairman of Island Insurance Companies. He also is a community leader in Honolulu, serving on nonprofit boards in addition to corporate boards. Glenn Fruya, president and chairman of Leadership Works, that's a leadership training company he started more than 30 years ago, grew up in Hilo on Hawaii Island. At the heart of the leadership style of each of these men is their understanding of local culture and how being an effective leader in Hawaii can be very different from anywhere else.
Being local is not about where you were born. You know, it's really about the kind of values you embrace and the kind of philosophy that you use to guide your life and the decisions you make in your life. So there are many local people that, you know, who were born and raised here that, you know, I don't think espouse local values, you know. But on the other hand, there are many people that have moved here that clearly, you know, the things that make, I think, Hawaii special resonated with them, which is why they chose to come here and live here and stay here.
This whole idea of local culture and what works. It used to be that certain positions in Hawaii guaranteed authority and respect, but that's less and less true now, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. You know, I think that, you know, when I grew up, which was when, you know, I think in the 60s, plantations were still very influential forces in shaping our community. And there tended to be, you know, informal leaders within those communities that people looked up to provide leadership. So in like the town that I grew up in, you know, the principal of the school was considered you know, important figure. Some of the union leaders are considered important figures. Some of the plantation bosses were also looked up to as being, you know, important community leaders. And so people gravitated to them. And as they would in turn communicate different, you know, projects or concerns, you know, people would rally around them. And so I think that those days have passed. I think that it's harder to get people to align behind different initiatives. In my experience, you know, you run across two different kinds of leadership. Now, one is implied leadership, leadership that is the result of the position that you hold. And most people fall into the category of having power because of the implied authority associated with them. Whereas, you know, there are other people that, you know, have, I think, real power, a power that, you know, it generates from they're able to assert themselves and the kind of vision and their ability to articulate concepts and ideas in a way that makes people feel like it resonates with them. Definitely, you know, leadership requires a level of trust and confidence. It all starts from that. You know, if you don't have the ability to engender the trust of the people that you're trying to reach, well, you cannot lead them. You cannot convince them to move in any particular direction. That's why, you know, great leaders have a certain special ability to engender that kind of trust. You know, you have to be able to stick your neck out, because that's how, you know, you progress. And so asserting leadership involves taking risks, being willing to stand apart from the pack, and that takes a level of courage. And so, you know, those kinds of leaders are fewer and harder to come by, but those are the kinds of leaders that I think exercise real ability to move people, to effect change. And I don't know why. I mean, it just seems that I don't find as many of those kinds of people around as I think used to exist in the past.
I really do believe that the upbringing in Hilo, one thing it does is, you know, you're humble. You grow up humble.
Do you think humility, I mean, we prize humility mm-hmm. in the mm-hmm. Hawaiian culture mm-hmm. as well, mm-hmm. but humility is seen as a weakness other places.
Yes, it is. It's viewed in many Western cultures as a weakness. But to me, I think that's strength, when I can stand in front of my group and say, you know what, guys, I'm really sorry. I messed up. Forgive me. You know, and just lay it out there. What's the alternative? What, blame people, make excuses? I do a lot of work on island-style leadership, because I do believe it is a distinct and unique form of leadership. There's this thing I call the same-same equilibrium, the same-same equilibrium. And it roots back to Ahupua'a, where it was a society, it was an egalitarian society, where everybody in this society had a role and everybody did their part. But all of the contributors within that society were viewed as equal. So everybody same-same, mm-hmm. right? Okay, so here's the deal. Centuries later, the same-same essence, mentality, still is embedded in all of us. You gotta stay in this equilibrium. Same-same, everybody same-same. Everybody does equal in their contribution. What's very interesting is whenever you break same-same, okay, and you think you act as if you're better, right? Because if everybody's same-same, then nobody's more important or better than anybody else, right? But as minute you break it, and this is where a lot of times people who come from away, good people, they don't understand this equilibrium, they break it. As soon as you get to this I'm better than you mentality, to your tone of voice, to being too directive, not listening, mm-hmm. showing everybody how smart you are, the immediate response always is, who the heck does he think he is? Who the heck does he think he is? Immediate response.
Right.
And once that response comes out, you can't lean in Hawaii. Who the heck do you think you are? And they don't tell it to you in your face. It's Hawaii.
They just turn away.
I always say to my leaders that I work with, Hawaii is the world capital of passive-aggressive behavior. I do a lot of work with mainlanders coming down to try to help them understand some of these little nuances of this. Please do not break the same equilibrium, because as soon as those words come out, that question pops. It's really hard to recover. The other thing with island people, they don't forgive. They take forever to let go. The way I teach it is this. There are two types of leaders, Leslie. There's circular leaders. These are people who are very collaborative. They're relationship-oriented. They're kind. They really engage people. Circular. Mm-hmm. Island people are generally more circular. Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's because in Hawaii, we're a three-way blend of cultures. We are influenced heavily by Eastern culture, because in the 1940s, 40% of the population of Hawaii was Japanese. So, heavy Bushido code influence here. Mm-hmm. The the one element of this, the Bushido code, is this: you always operate from a sense of imperfection. You always come from a state of dissatisfaction.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so if you're always dissatisfied and you're kind of imperfect, you always got to work harder, you got to try harder, you got to study harder, you got to go to school, you got to learn. I never got praised by my parents. They never, ever praised a good job, Glenn, you did a wonderful job. Nothing. And I think, Bushido, they didn't want me to get all big-headed and arrogant and thinking I'm better than anybody else, right?
Right.
So they kept it really, really restrained, the praise and things like that. And yet we're all Americans. That's the Western influence. We're all Western-educated folk. But at the same time, the whole culture here is Hawaiian. Mm-hmm. We have a major Polynesian influence. And there's no place in the world these three forces come together like it does here in Hawaii. So the Polynesian and the Eastern Asian, right, give us this circular. We understand circular. That's why people are so collaborative and warm and aloha spirit and ohana. Western culture is much more linear. You know, there's the goal, here's the plan, now do it. Now
and
move.
If you have to run over somebody to get there, it's okay, because
right.
That's the goal.
Right. And there are a lot of island people who are just very linear too. The biggest mistake you can make in Hawaii is take your linear approach and slam it on the circular, right? And then that equilibrium gets broken. Who the heck do you think he is? You got to be both. Circular, collaboration, involvement, build a relationship, but at the point of execution, we all got to go linear. We've got to get the job done. I've always believed, Leslie, that whenever you impose things on people, when you just shove it in, you get compliance. They're going to do it because I'm afraid if I don't do it, they're going to scold me or fire me, whatever. When you inspire people bottom up, you get commitment. That's real leadership.
Teachers are among our most important leaders. They have the power to influence and shape the minds of young people who will become the next generation of leaders. Kumuhula Hokulani Holt, who is also the Cultural Programs Director of the Maui Arts and Culture Center, and Dr. Maynette Ani Benham, Dean of Hawaii Nui Akea at the University of Hawaii at Manoa School of Hawaiian Knowledge, are two such leaders. Their career paths are based on kuleana, the responsibilities handed down to them from their families and ancestors.
Hula has always been in our ohana. My grandmother was a kumuhula. She had seven daughters. Of her seven daughters, three became kumuhula. And of her granddaughters, first just me, and now my sister. And then of her great-granddaughters, my cousin Melia.
When did you decide you're going to be a kumu?
I did decide.
I guess that's nothing you decide on your own, right, in the hula world?
Yeah, I didn't decide. My mother decided for me. She said, well, I think it's time for you to begin teaching. And I went, oh, no, that belongs to other people. That doesn't belong to me. And she said, no, I talked to your auntie, and I think it's time for you to begin teaching. So I went kicking and screaming, but I went.
What kind of a kumu were you and are you?
I believe I'm pretty strict. I hope to instill in my students a love for hula, but also a love for this place that we call home, and for all the many generations of people that came before us that created the chants and the songs and the movements that we use. What a kumuhula is we want things our own way. And we demand that.
It is your world.
It is my world. I always tell my students, this is the world according to hoku within these four walls.
As a kumuhula, you get very involved in other people's families, in
your
family.
Oh, yeah.
So you're privy to a lot of the struggles that people go through.
Yes. You know, you get parents coming and saying, you know, my daughter's not paying attention to school. Kumu, can you please talk to her? You know, someone's marriage or passing, you get involved in your students' lives, and it's a good thing. Halau provides focus. It really gets you to appreciate every little thing, I believe. And halau is not only learning hula, but it also teaches you about yourself, how to push yourself a little bit more, how to think about the welfare of others within the halau, and then that translates to others outside of halau, how to practice or do Hawaiian values, because that's what you must have in Halo as well. How to get past pain and tired and late hours for a goal that you would like to reach. So those are all life lessons also.
So you're possessed at an early age of a conviction. You wanted to lead.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Because I was always told that I would. I was always told. My grandmothers, both my grandma Ani and my grandma Patikin, explained to me when I was very young about my name, Kapia Hiokalani. And it is a name of one of my great-great aunts who was a chanter in King Kalakaua's court. And basically what they said to me was that because I held this name, I had the responsibility of remembering the mo'olelo of our family. And I had the responsibility of contributing to the health and well-being of my family. That was it. That's what they told me. And, you know, I said, okay. Because that's what you do. Your kupuna tell you that, and you say, okay, so what do I need to do?
And there are all kinds of ways to accomplish that,
right,
too.
Yeah, there's all kinds of ways to do that. And I just found this to be my journey, you know, in educational leadership. I just found that to be what really gets me excited. What really inspires me is, and it all started because in fifth grade at Cokahead Elementary School, Mrs. Kwan made me do flannel board stories for the kindergartners. And I loved it. I loved just telling stories, creating stories and telling them to young kids and watching the light bulbs go off. So my first job was as a kindergarten teacher. What a great job. You know, where you get unconditional love every single day.
And I know you've said you always want to be a teacher.
I always.
No matter what else you do or how you do it, you want to be a teacher.
Yeah, always, always. And that came from the stories. And teachers are leaders, you know, and good leaders are great teachers. The genius of leadership is living into grace. And it's that idea of creating a space where people can feel really safe, even though you say the worst things. I want you to feel safe here. I just want you to feel safe. And no matter what you have to say, no matter how angry you are, go ahead, go and do that. And when you're po, let's get to work. You know, because otherwise we're not going to get it done. We're just not going to do it. And that's how I lead. You know, and I try really hard to listen. And as I listen, you know, I try to move it back to the core issue, as you said. Ask more questions about how that has to do with the issue. Keep moving it.
But sometimes there is no consensus.
And sometimes there's not.
And how do you, I mean, then you have to figure out, somebody has to call it.
Yeah.
This is not going to be solved this way.
Yeah. And I do that. I do that too. You know, ask the people who work for me, you know, it's very open, we're safe, we're gonna talk about it, and this is the road we're gonna take. I'm not afraid to do that. No, I'm not afraid to do that. It's nice to know. I want people to know that everybody has voice. You know, everyone has voice. It's a labor intensive process, but everybody has voice. And in the end, you know, everybody will know that there will be a direction we're going to go, you know?
And because people want closure. You can't talk everything to death.
Yeah. In a microcosm, yeah, you know, we have a lot of diverse perspectives, but across the United States, across the globe, you know, there isn't one way to do anything. But I do think that we're reaching a time where there are more young people and young leaders who are seeing the promise and the potential of bringing together different groups and really talking about hard issues of renewable resources, about food safety, about education and well-being that's very issue-oriented, and doing it in a way that is grounded grounded in our lineage and our stories. I think we're ready at that point to do that. And I think that's our work at the university to help prepare, you know, my community leaders to be able to do that. I learned that, you know, you do good work. You have good intentions, you know. It doesn't matter how much I can tell you about what I wrote or what I studied or whatever, right? What matters is that I have good intentions and I work really hard and I try to be fair in everything that I do. And I try to be kind, you know. And I lead in grace, you know, developing a space where people can feel grace and welcome, you know. And then we'll move forward. Ohana does not always mean that we are of the same blood. Ohana means that we can agree on a set of principles and a mission for the work that we're doing, and we're going to be innovative and entrepreneurial, and we're going to work together really hard to get there. That's Ohana.
Humility, trust, listening, fairness, influence, all important qualities that Hawaii's leaders say are critical to good leadership. These are values that we can use in our own lives, whether it's how we act with our families, in our jobs, or how we conduct ourselves in the broader community. Our closing words of wisdom will be from the late Skipa Diaz, legendary football coach at Farrington High School in Honolulu. Mahalo to our Long Story Short guests who have shared their stories and insights with us, and mahalo to you for joining us. For PBS Hawaii and Long Story Short, I'm Leslie Wilcox. Aloha hui ho.
For audio and written transcripts of all episodes of Long Story Short with Leslie Wilcox, visit pbshawaii.org. To download free podcasts of Long Story Short with Leslie Wilcox, go to the Apple iTunes Store or visit pbshawaii.org.
I developed an acronym. And the acronym was spelled out HEART, H-E-A-R-T. And each letter represented a basic Tanayan belief that you want the other person to acquire. And mine for the young kids. And the word heart, the five words, H, refer to humility, the ability to, you know, to listen to another person and bite your tongue if he's saying something that's different than what you want. But being humble is a quality that is really, really sought after for a lot of people, but never acquired. But humility is a good one. E, education. That one was very, very significant in my family's upbringing. A, attitude, a positive attitude, making sure that, you know, whatever the goal, whatever the project, you set yourself out to be positive and get the darn thing done. R, responsibility. You gotta be responsible for all the things that you do, and sometimes for the things that your friends and your loved ones are doing. But being responsible in that manner has some beautiful connotations that grow from it. And then T, of course, stands for team.